February 2011 UK Geocaching Podcast. You can find us at www.ukgcpodcast.com. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook. Welcome to February. So how it was January for you guys? Mine started with the best intentions. As you'll know, I committed to do a 365 days of caching thing. It seemed to be the trendy thing to do, and I thought, yeah, why not? Let's go for it. I started Christmas Eve 2010. No, I started Christmas Day 2010. I intended to finish on Christmas Eve 2011, and I got to, wait for it, 10th of January, 16 days. Yeah, not so good, eh? There's lots of reasons I could give. Too much work, too much home life, too much scouting, this, that, the other. I'm not going to. Crap caches. That's what it was. Micros in locations, nanos in locations. Why is it there? What's the point? Oh, look, there's a dog bin. Let's put a cache on it. I really do live really that close to work. I live sort of a 10-minute drive, and I found all of the caches that I wanted to find on that route to work within about the first 3 weeks of me starting properly caching back in 2009. I don't know, I was finding that it was going to be a case of having to drive from work or to work, go out at lunchtime where I only get a half-hour lunch break, and very quickly I was going to see that it was going to be a half an hour's drive just to get somewhere to find a cache, and I gave up. I couldn't be bothered. However, I did get two first-to-finds this month, both very close to home, and both were more than 3 hours after they were published. That was quite stunning, actually, that, around here normally they go within the hour, sometimes within 20 minutes. These two caches were, they were urban, they were, one was a micro, one was a very small, I can't say it was a micro, because it did actually have room for geocoins in it. They were okay. I'm just absolutely stunned that, you know, it took 3 hours for anybody to go and find them. I did find that about 10 minutes after I found it, somebody else had been along and found it too. And as it happens, one of them yesterday, that Saturday the 5th of February, my wife was driving past and she saw somebody who we think we both know quite well, actually looking for the cash. So, yeah, it's still there. In another bit of news, I have hidden another cache. So far, it's not been found. I'm not going to give you any more details than that at the moment because it's a bit of a project, but just to say I did hide it on the 30th of January, and I will talk more about that next month. So, elsewhere in this month's show, I want to do a little bit more on open caching. I know I said last month that I wouldn't talk much more about it, but in the interest of fairness, I thought I would. A very quick section on that piece that they did on the BBC. If you haven't seen it, it is on YouTube. A new geocaching book, the Cache of the Month, which is going to be a new segment, the new GAGB newsletter, February's geocaching.com updates, along with bits more information about the open street mapping. We're going to do all the regular stuff, bit on 12 of 12, the events that are going on that you might be interested in, some of which I am attending. Flotsam and Jetsam, that's an interesting cache, that is. Hello, shout-outs and milestones, so shall we get on with it? So, as I said in the intro, I've been back and had another look at the open caching. I thought it only fair. I must just stress that this is only the opencaching.com version, the one that's owned by Garmin. This doesn't include the .orgs or the .org.uk or the .de or any of the other open caching sites. Quite literally, I'm only interested in the .com version at the moment. It's certainly interesting. They've done. You can see a lot of work onto how the interface works. There are a couple of few things that really get on my nerves. You first log in, okay. you go to find a cache and you're presented with the screen and it comes up and it tells me I'm in Manchester, or it wants me to search at Manchester, comma Manchester. I've given it my home coordinates. Why can't it tell me to search from my home location? Or, the geocaching can tell me that there's an option to search from my current location if I'm using a Wi-Fi or if I'm using a broadband. Geocaching can get it right. Now, I don't know whether it's because I'm on Virgin Broadband and they're based out of Manchester or something stupid like that, so it's just detecting that, but that's just, you know, a niggle that gets on my nerves. Reviewing of caches, they don't have dedicated reviewers. You are the reviewer, which is, in a way, it's fantastic. You get lots of people looking at your cache. When you hide it, you get 12 hours before it goes live, and people from all over the world can look at the listing and say, oh no, this is wrong, it's the wrong cache type, it's this, that, the other. They can vote it up and vote it down. That's lovely, but you could get somebody from Germany or the US or Australia or the far reaches of Russia looking at your cache. They don't know the location that it's in, or potentially the terrain that you're looking at least with a geocaching dedicated reviewer. They've got this specific process that they go through where they look at a custom set of maps and they review all the cache information on the page, and they can look at proximity issues and stuff like that. Before the cache gets reviewed, there's, to me, the potential for a number of issues before the cache is actually accepted. And on the acceptance of the cache, what's awesomeness all about? When your cache first gets published, it gets an awesomeness of a set number. Presumably that's so that it can't drop or doesn't drop into the negative before somebody first finds it. But, I saw one that started off with an awesomeness of 3. What does 3 mean? There's no... Is it what? 3 bananas? 3%? 3 caches like this cache. It's almost as arbitrary as the favouriting system on geocaching.com. I will mention that a little bit later. So far, there seems to be only around 270 caches published on the OX site in the UK. And when I looked around, some of them, admittedly, I only took a small sample of about 20. Couldn't find any that had actually been logged directly on the OX website. Only finds that it had been imported from the geocaching listings, where people have exported and then imported to the open caching. So my question to you is anybody actually using this website? I know there's people saying, yes, it's fantastic, yes, we're going to use it because it's completely free and all this, but is anybody in the UK actually using and hiding and finding caches on opencaching.com? So while you were mulling over the open caching questions, whether you actually use it or not, did you see last week, I think, Mike Bushell from the BBC was doing a thing for BBC News on geocaching? I think it ran for about 3 hours on... Not 3 hours total, it was only about a 5-minute segment that ran every half hour between, I think, 6:30 and 9:30 last Saturday, where he actually went out and did some geocaching, and it got quite a good feature on it. From the primary perspective of the interview and the segment, it was mostly a fun piece about getting kids out caching and getting them out into the countryside while but still allowing them to be nerdy. There were some faces that, although I don't recognise, I do recognise the names. It was quite a good little piece, I thought. Apparently the cache that was in the puddle was relocated by the cameraman to make it more interesting before anybody could tell him that no, that wasn't a good place to do it. They went and found the cache, and then they went and found UK's oldest surviving cache, which is called A View from Coombe Hill. And then Mike left his own cache behind. Along with that, he did release a travel bug from that cache. I believe it's going quite nicely, and it's still in existence. When they were doing the report on the BBC, he said, it's travelled 15 miles! Oh, yes, that's fantastic. Well done, Mike. as a result of that piece, I did see on Saturday morning that there was at least a few caches. One found one of my caches on, I think, the Sunday. It was the very first cache that they found, and it's not, to be honest with you, a fantastic cache to find. It's almost a protest nano at the use of the iPhone for hiding geocaches, but hey. Two of the people that I have picked up on is Rachel Orch and JXB1970. So hi to both of you. Congratulations on finding the rash. I hope you continue with it for many months. I know that Rachel Orch is quite active in the forums at the moment, and she's getting on really well with it. I hope you continue with your adventure for long term, and perhaps we can catch up sometime in the future. And that's not the only publicity that the sport's had in the last few weeks. On the 1st of February, the Geocaching Association of Great Britain released a new magazine, or web-style, digital-style magazine, I should call it, really, called Seeker. I believe there was a competition for the name. I don't know who won it, but congratulations to that person. It's an interesting read. It's going to be a bi-monthly publication, I believe, and it's going to carry all of the latest information about geocaching in the UK. Hopefully we won't be stepping on each other's toes. I'll keep my fingers crossed. Issue one is particularly relevant for myself and the podcast because, well, we're in it. They're trying to do a cacher of the issue, and I was very nicely chosen to answer some questions on my geocaching career and why I started the podcast, so you can have a read of that in the newsletter. They've also got information in there about a new book that's been released. It was released on the 15th of January. It's called Geocaching in the UK, and it's written by a geocacher, a proper geocacher, not just a fake one, called Country Matters. I haven't read all of the book yet. I will give my own personal review once I have read it. I must say that it was a very, very quick delivery, direct from Cicerone, I think that's how you pronounce it, who is the publisher of the book. It arrived very, very quickly using a very nice little discount code that you can find if you read Seeker. I'll try and get a proper review of it done for the next show, but in the meantime, allow me to say congratulations to Country Matters on getting your book published. It's an amazing achievement. Geocaching.com updates for February. Wasn't particularly impressed when, I don't know if you noticed, but the OpenStreetMaps disappeared partway through January. And I kind of had a panic and, oh no, because to be honest with you, they are much, much better than Google Maps as far as the geocachers are concerned. However, they're back, thankfully. Something else that they've added in the latest set of updates, there is some filtering on the new beta maps for premium members. On the maps now, all members, basic and premium, can see your hides and finds, but premium members have the capability to display your cache hides and finds, remove your cache finds and hides for premium members, filter by cache type, which is fantastic because that's something you can't do on the old map. So if you want to hide, say, puzzle caches or multi caches or virtual caches or whatever, you can do. They've also added my topo mapping. I haven't looked at that yet, but presumably it's something that somebody's going to find useful, otherwise they wouldn't have bothered adding it. Elsewhere on the website, they've added milestones have been added to statistics. It was pointed out that once you get to 1,000 finds, it counts up in 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, which is going to cause, I think, quite a number of people, including myself, to carry on using an external statistics package. Elsewhere, they've added maps in the statistics as well, which is absolutely fantastic, but entirely useless if you've only cached like me in, say, the United Kingdom. You just get a big red blotch for the United Kingdom and everything else is just white or grey. Would be nice if perhaps in the future they could look at putting the UK counties in. Of course, that's going to cause its own issues when doing that, but we'll see what they say. Okay, entirely different to the February's geocaching updates. This coming, I think it's Saturday, is 12 of 12 day. I have mentioned this before. If you don't know what it is, essentially, you on the 12th day of the month, you take 12 photographs to represent your day, and you upload them to the specific websites, be it your own, be it Flickr or wherever, and then you put a link to those photos on Chad Darnell's website. with it being a Saturday, it would be absolutely fantastic. If you are going out geocaching, take some photographs, give a little bit of information. Obviously, per usual rules, try not to give away any spoilers for the caches. But it will be interesting. If you want to leave a link to your 12 of 12 on either on my 12 of 12 or my personal website, or on the 12 of 12 post that I'll create specifically on the ukgcpodcast.com website, that'll be absolutely fantastic. We'll see if we can share the experience. January's question of the month was, what do you hate about geocaching? Now, I must say that most of the responses I get said that we don't hate anything about geocaching. More like pet peeves. However, we did have a great rant from Ellie and Ian, me and you in the Middle East. I will read this word for word, so apologies if it sounds a little bit monosyllabic. They say, I think this is a pet peeve of a lot of expats out here in the Middle East. Geocaches hidden on US or other countries' military bases. You need permission to enter the base to find the cache, published on www.geocaching.com as regular country caches. For example, one, we were in Kuwait recently for a quick week of geocaching. You have a quick week. Surely it's 7 days just like every other week. Anyway, there are 87 caches in Kuwait, which is 2 hours from top to bottom, but only about 10 are accessible and not on military bases. The only Kuwaiti geocacher, in brackets, yes, he is the only geocacher in Kuwait. His nick is GPSman77, so hello to you. He met us while we were there and expressed his disappointment that as a new geocacher, he is unable to find caches hidden in his own country because they're on US military bases. Example 2, they say the US military here in Riyadh hosted an event last year and only 2 people attended. The rest of us couldn't get permission to go on the base. How 2 people qualifies as an event beats us. Can't we give these caches stroke events the category of their own so they aren't listed in the regular cache listing for countries like premium member caches or something similar for military personnel? Ironically, military personnel who hid these caches on their base can come off base to find local caches. Seems to be a bit unfair to me. Due to geocaching.com rules and regulations, we can't hide a geocache in another country because it's against the rules. I think they call them vacation caches. You can only post in your country of location unless you get an in-country sponsor to help with maintenance. It seems that military personnel have their own set of rules because they can list their home country location as the USA and still get to hide a cache in another country. Again, I think these caches should have their own category separate from regular access caches. Yeah, what do you reckon on those? Let's have some opinion from the rest of the community. Should you be able to list a cache or hide a cache that's on a US or other country's military base that you can't get to? Moving on, Jan, who said, I think it was on Facebook, geocachers who think that everyone should play the game the way they do and get sanctimonious if anyone dares to be different. Yeah, geocaching is a game that's played the way you want to play it. If you want to go for a numbers run, go for a numbers run. If you want to play and only go and find one cache a year or one cache every 2 years, like I know one cacher does, Kathy, please do so. You know, they shouldn't be saying, no, you can only play it this way. Berticus Dan says, being stuck at work. Well, I don't hate that about geocaching, I just hate being stuck at work, especially on a nice sunny day. Jane Silver Hoarders says, I hate the way the powers that be arbitrarily are archiving some old and fun caches I've been watching for years. I did ask Jane if she could follow up on that, but I didn't see a response from her, unfortunately. So, Jane, if you're listening, please get in touch, let us know, expand on that information a little bit for me. Stella says, there's nothing about geocaching that I hate, but I really, really don't like it when people don't pass on trackables and just hold on to them forever and ever. Yeah, I must say that's getting to me a little bit right now. It seems that none of my caches moved in the last month at all. Sorry. None of my trackables moved in the last month at all. Can you imagine if I tried to move one of my caches? Don't think I'd be popular for that. Ray H says, I hate evil, evil puzzle caches and DNFing still after multiple visits. There's always the ignore button, Rach. Ray, Rach, I'm sorry. Rach is the name of my wife, and I just read it as Rach. Yeah, you can always just ignore the cache, then it won't appear in your listings at all. Not the most helpful advice, but hey, you can always ask the cache owner and see if they can give you some help or some hints on the way to solving it. Gemma is the last one. She says, mud and ice. Well, yeah. Also, when you really can't find one and you've been there for 3 hours, no joke. Surely there's a time when you just call it quits on a cache, and like Ray, you just hit the ignore button on the cache. You've been there for 3 hours. Does it stop becoming fun, or does it just start to bug you that much that you've got to find it no matter what? Thanks to some lovely people within the geocaching community, we've got some great prizes to give away over the next couple of months. Mostly geocoins or travel buddies, stuff like that. But before we announce what we're going to do for this month, then we need to do the January competition results. The question that I asked was, who is the chairman of the Geocaching Association of Great Britain? Apparently it wasn't a very difficult question. The right answer, of course, is Dave Edwards of the Wombles. So who got it right? Well, everyone. See, it was that easy. So who was the winner? Chosen entirely at random, Molly Jack. So well done to you. Get in touch, give me your postal address, and I'll get the GAGB kit geocoin on its way to you in the next couple of days. For the February competition, then, we've got more geocoins to give away. I might give away a few this time. The question is a little bit more difficult. What I want to know is, what date was Mike Bushell's cache published? I'm not even going to give you the name of the cache or the GC number. I'll read it again for you. What date was Mike Bushell's cache published? Get your answers in to me by the 28th of February. One of the competitions that we ran a couple of months ago was to record your geocaching adventure. John from the Mischief Bandits very nicely submitted a video, which I did disqualify him from the competition for, but I did ask at the time to if he can sometime upload it to YouTube so that we can link to it. I did have an email from him saying that unfortunately he hasn't had time to do that yet, so no link to that video. But what he has very nicely done for us is recorded what he calls his geocaching diary. It's a beautiful piece of audio, so let's have a listen.
Hi, I'm John of the Mischief Bandits. Today's January. This is the 6th of January. It's the day that I'm the day before I'm due to go back to work. A nice early shift tomorrow. So I thought I'd try and get in a last minute bit of caching, trying to take the opportunity while the babba's being looked after and the wife's off asleep after she's finished work. I thought I'd come out today and try and net a few more caches just to get January started, and also to see if I could get some slightly better rated train difficulties as well to help improve my stats. I know it's not all about the stats, but it is still nice to get those averages up a little bit to show that you don't go for the easy caches all the time. But I'm out near Bristol in just by Frampton Cottrell, Winterbourne, and I've decided to do a series called the Odyssey. Should net me around 8 caches. Nice walk through the countryside. I think overall it's probably going to be about a 3-mile walk. 6 normal caches along with 2 puzzle caches. Working out stuff on the way. So the weather's a bit overcast, threatening to rain. We'll see how we go. I've come out today. I'm equipped with a nice printout from Memory Map to help show me the paths that we got around here, the public footpaths. I've marked out the caches just on there so I can give me an idea and save having to use the GPS all the time. I've got my iPhone 4. It's always good for paperless caching and logging as you go along. I think it's always nice for... certainly, I always like it for my caches that I've got hidden, that you always sort of... If you receive the logs back in real time, you can see where people have found a cache, then half an hour later found another one and work the way around, like a series that you might have. I always think it's quite nice. So I do try and log as I go along, and maybe also be able to upload some photographs. But I've also got along with me a Magellan GPS Exploris GC, which I got with a little bit of money from Christmas. I thought it would be suitably be interesting to see how much more accurate it is compared to the iPhone. I thought, if nothing else, it's a toughened device. Takes some strain out of the battery life on the iPhone if it's working, and it looks a nice looking device. See where we go on. Although I am already wondering whether I should have gone for one of the Garmin Oregon type devices which come with the OS maps loaded, precisely because of looking up footpaths and such like. But that's how we get on. Anyway, I'm off to the first cache. It's called Old Tree, and then Trojan Horse, Cyclops. So all looking very good. Anyway, I'll catch up with you in a bit. Okay, I've just logged my second cache of the day. I've noticed this is a premium set of caches as well, so it's quite nice to make use of my premium account. This one's called the Trojan Horse, and it's by the Odysseans, as they all are. Reference is GC27E9Z. It's fairly easy to find, nice little Tupperware type box. So I'll be able to set my friend GapTag's Pixel travel bug free for the first time, as he didn't have any opportunity while he was up in Scotland due to all the snow and such like. It's pretty muddy around about where I am right now. These caches are quite nice because they put a bit of story along with each cache, relating it a little bit to the area that they've hidden the cache. So for example, this one, the Trojan War was over. The clever Greek Odysseus had tricked the enemy into bringing a colossal wooden horse within the walls of Troy. The Trojans had no idea that Greek soldiers were hidden inside under the command of Odysseus. So it's quite nice because actually it's a field full of horses. So nice to be related. Right, on to the next cache, which is out in the woods. So I'll speak to you soon. Okay, I've just got back to the car after a couple hours caching here. I think I'm walking about 3 inches taller due to all the mud I've picked up as I've walked around on my boots. It's nice when you walk around and seeing all the signed logs, you recognise names, local sort of names down here. Lord Rasselin, Captain Gore-Tex, a couple of that are familiar, and a couple of people I know have signed my own caches. Generally been a successful day. Battery life of the Magellan is not quite as good as I'd expect. Accuracy maybe a little bit better than the iPhone, but the iPhone is generally about the same, and you've got the advantage of being able to see Google Maps, Bing Maps, Memory Map and such like, and I think it overall is a very good device for doing caching, if I'm being honest. The printout was also very useful, try and work out where the paths were and to try and plan a route around this little series, which you can't really do on the Magellan. So this again, where maybe one of the Garmins with the OS maps built in, you could plan this a little bit easier in advance to work your way around, be a little bit more useful than this Magellan. But still, for the price, it's a good device. So yeah. Anyway, it's just for me to say thank you to the Odysseans for setting up this series of caches, and I look forward to coming back and try and complete the last two another day. Alright, bye bye.
Well, I think you'll say that was quite an interesting listen. Thank you ever so much to John Mischief Bandits for doing that for us. If anybody else wants to do the same, it's ever so simple to do. Grab your iPhone, your Android, your BlackBerry, or whatever. They've all got recording on them. Record us some audio, export it to your PC, and send it to us. We can do any format you like, and we can convert to any format you like, so don't worry about any of that. Just get your recording done and get it into us. Right, on with the show. Right, I've got to be a little bit careful as I say some of the next stuff in this next segment, because my lovely wife is, I think, within hearing distance of me as I'm recording this. I just want to talk about a few events, and we've discovered the method of getting my lovely wife to the events. How'd you fancy your week underway, honey? Yeah, it's worked. Okay. The first one I want to talk about, basically we're going to do these pretty much in date order. We've got Flotsam and Jetsam, which is actually a geocache, GC15J1D. There seems to be a posse, shall we call them, of people organising to go and do a run on this cache on the 20th of March. why is that date so specific? Well, the cache is a 5-5. It's based up near Weston-super-Mare. I'm sure I'll get told off for not giving the exact location of it. You can go and look at it on the website, of course. It's a difficulty 5 terrain 5 cache because you've got to go traipsing through the mud flats off the west coast. There are only very specific dates of the year that you can do this. The cache owner does update those dates on the website every so often, and when the cache isn't available, he does very kindly disable it to say, you know, it's not available in any other times. The next available date realistically is the 20th of March, and that's when quite a number of people are looking to go and get the cache on that day. I may well, if I get the opportunity, go up there and, at least if I don't take part in the cache, do some recording for the podcast, catch up with some geocachers as they're doing it or after they've done it, and get their impressions of it. What I'm more likely looking forward to doing is I think it's the 25th and 26th of August, when the next realistic spring tides are available, when the tide is going to be at its lowest. I'm looking to go for that midweek event then. It means a couple of days off work and a trip up to Weston, which, well, you know, I'm sure we can sell that one too. So we'll see how that one goes and give you updates over the next few months. The next one that I've already mentioned this one, I think, at least once. It's Spring Madness 2011 in Staffordshire on the 25th to the 27th of March. The GC code is GC2G817. We will be at that one. I've just confirmed with the boss that we can go up. We might not be camping the whole weekend, but certainly will they be there for at least the Saturday afternoon and evening. Wild West Cache Bash, 24th to the 26th of June in Cheddar. The GC code is GC2M009. I will check that before I put the show notes up on the website, because I'm not entirely certain that one's correct. It's in Cheddar, right next to Cheddar Gorge. The cache owner says, or the event owner even says, that that's the same weekend as the Glastonbury Festival, but he reckons that it won't be a problem because most of the people that are going to the Glastonbury Festival will be there from the Wednesday or Thursday. So that one's quite an interesting one. There is camping there available as well. Now, obviously, the big one every year is the Mega in Wales, and I've been very nicely contacted by one of the guys that's organising the event, who says, I'm very privileged that he's listening to our podcast. Apparently, he's not a fan of the podcasting regime, shall we say. So he has sent me quite a bit of information on the event, so let's read out the latest update from him. He says, after some frustrating problems with our shop and PayPal, we were pleased to be able to offer polo shirts and supporters packs in addition to fundraising coins from the beginning of January. And what a response we've had. Our shopkeepers have been kept very busy packing and posting, and January has proved to be our best fundraising month to date. The quality polo shirts come in a range of 14 colours and 7 sizes. 7, wow. And are embroidered with the Mega Wales logo and your geocaching name. Because of the need to get shirts individually embroidered and a batching process for getting this done, orders may take 4 to 6 weeks before dispatch, so if you want one, don't wait until too close to the event. Supporters packs will contain the Mega Wales souvenir brochure, geocaching related goodies such as a ready-made cache and camo bag, and either 1, 2, or 3 official 2011 Mega Wales geocoins. These coins will only be available through purchase of a supporters pack, which is being sold on the basis of being picked up at the Mega event, so no shipping charges being added. This preserves finance for the overall benefit of the event. It is appreciated that some people want to support the event but may not be able to attend and or wish to get the limited edition event geocoin. Arrangements will be made to send out packs by post if necessary, but we may have to ask for post and package costs to be paid by the purchaser. However, a final decision will be made on this much closer to the event when the overall financial position is known with a high degree of confidence. Please bear in mind that coins will only be manufactured a few weeks before the event and as the planned first appearance of the coins will be on the day of the event, we would not want to dispatch any in advance of this time. So basically what they're saying is if you want to get them posted, you can, but not until after the event. We have commissioned 3 special fundraising geocoins, all with a distinctly Welsh flavour. Leek. Sorry. a miner's safety lamp in lit and unlit versions. a golf coin to celebrate the first visit of the Ryder Cup to Wales in 2010, and a slate coin, which we believe is the first geocoin to be produced in this material anywhere in the world and uses genuine Welsh slate and is made locally in Wales. Sorry, South Wales. More on the coins. If Wales is the land of song, then South Wales was once the land of song, steel and coal. So what would be more iconic for a coin produced in support of a mega event in South Wales than a miner's lamp? Coal mining may have all but ceased now, but the miner's safety lamp remains a potent symbol of our heritage. 50 millimetres, approximately 2 inches high, these coins have proved to be extremely popular. Despite a second minting, stocks are again getting low. On the second one, unless you are a golfer or you live in Newport, you might not realise that Newport hosted the 2010 Ryder Cup. They've got this golf competition, which takes place every 2 years between teams representing Europe and the United States, is one of the major events in the golfing calendar, and our second coin reflects that. This coin is available in antique silver and nickel silver finishes, and stocks again are low. There are definitely no plans to make any more. The slate geocoin has been 400 million years in the making, made from rock mined in North Wales. It's roughly 48 millimetres, about 1.8 inches in diameter, and is a handcrafted, polished, circular disc of slate rock that's been laser etched with the design of a Welsh dragon on one side from our national flag, and either the Prince of Wales feathers or a Celtic design on the reverse. These are heraldic symbols which are strongly linked with Wales. What makes this coin special, though, is that despite the fact that the design on the coins may be the same, each and every coin is unique. Because it's hewn from naturally occurring slate, each coin has minor blemishes that actually accentuate the coin's appearance. For example, little tiny silvery flecks of minerals that catch the light at certain angles, or slight differences in colour across the coin's circumference, known as clouding. Now, I must just say, guys, you've cost me a lot of money today as I'm recording this. I saw the announcement on the geocaching.com website from, I think it was Eclectic Penguin, about the availability of the slate coins, and immediately I went and ordered one. Of course, while I was doing that, I had to order the supporters pack as well. I suppose I should tell the wife that this means that we're coming to Wales. Yay! Love Wales. So, anyway, with only 6 months to go, work and excitement is ramping up. But everything is coming together quite nicely. The camo bag production line is in full swing, with the seamstresses beavering away at their sewing machines. They have even more of an incentive now the packs are on sale. We continue to look at how the day will run from registration to closing, and all that will go on in between, such as the geocaching talks. Of course, it's not just about the mega event itself. We have 10 days of events, starting on the Wednesday before, with a taste of orienteering at Pembury Country Park, and finishing with sunset on the mega, which includes a low tide crossing to Worm's Head on the Friday afternoon. The Friday after. As well as providing variety, we've tried to celebrate South Wales and hopefully include venues that will appeal to non-caching partners. Details of all our plans can be found on the website and will be updated as more things are confirmed. And of course, as per usual, I will put the links to both the cache page and the event website onto the post for this show. Two more just to mention, both from a very nice man called Jackaro, also known as Daryl. 2nd to the 4th of September, I think. Unfortunately, I didn't write that down in my show notes. The Summer's End event in the Peak District. There isn't a GC number for it because it can't be registered. I think it's 6 months before the event's due. We'll stay in contact with Jackaro and bring you up with more information on that one. Certainly I'm hoping to attend that one though. And the second one from Daryl is the Winter's End Flash Mob on Sunday the 6th of March. The GC code is GC2MWZC. It's at 12:10 PM. Read the cache page for special instructions, because there are some instructions there and you will need to bring some special equipment. Nothing drastic, nothing's going to cost you too much money, but you will need some special equipment with you. That GC code again was GC2MWZC. I'm not going to be at that one because unfortunately I can't justify going all that distance for what's going to end up 22 minutes flash mob. So hopefully we'll see you at one of those events soon. Right, we've got a few hellos to say for this month. First off, I want to say hi to Andy Smith, also known as Head Hard Hat. Very many congratulations on winning yet another Retriever Award. That's the second one he's won in the second year running for his blog and GeoSnippets website. It's no mean feat to win one of those awards. I've seen how hard the competition can be. So congratulations, Andy. Bernie the Geocacher had a minor complaint with me for last month because he didn't get the notification that the January show had been published, and there was a very good reason for this. It's because I deleted my personal Twitter account. I was getting a lot of spammers trying to follow me, or following me indeed. So without thinking about it, I just got really fed up with it and deleted the account. If you want to follow me again, if you were before, or even if you weren't, my new Twitter account ID is Yes That Finch. That's Yankee Echo Sierra Tango Hotel Alpha Tango Foxtrot India November Charlie Hotel. It's not updated that often, but you know what, it's not going to cost you anything to follow me if you want to. I will, if you're a cacher, I will follow you back just for the information. Next up, I've got to say hello to a couple of bonkers colonials who seem to cause nothing but trouble when they get together. That's Rowan 732000 and Cat 021, also known as Anna May and Katie. I know they're listening to the show. They are personal friends of mine, and I can get away with calling bonkers colonials. Come on, guys, hurry up and get that cash hidden. I want to start a race with some travel bugs. Gavin of the Irks, I look forward to hearing some of your adventures soon. You know you want to. Come on. Ian, Mad Pro Forg. Got in touch to mention a couple of other free maps similar to the OpenStreet maps, but specifically for push bikes. And apparently I've got rid of those, so I will put those onto the website because they're not in my list. Okay. I also want to say hello to, a milestone and congratulation to Paul SMS Tex, who joined the 100 Club. Thankfully, this isn't like the Mile High Club, but it's the club for finding 100 caches in a day, and I've got to say, this is one of those other occasions when you've got to be a little bit mad. Maybe one day I'll get to join, but I doubt it. Lastly, I want to say hello to everybody at the Hampshire Monthly Midweek Caching Events. There is one, it might be this Wednesday, I think, so I hope to catch up with some of you then. Well, that's almost it for another month. I've got to say, this one seems to be an incredibly short month, and I've got a horrible feeling I've forgotten something. I really can't think about what it is, though. I just no idea at all. If I have missed something out, let me know, please. Lastly, though, last month we started a poll on the website, and the question was, how often do you cache? The most popular, with 49% of the votes, was a couple of times a week. 10% of you went for every day. I did go for every day, but obviously that changed fairly quickly. We do have another question up right now. It's on nano caches, so I'll be interested to see the results of that one. Just a couple of reminders. Don't forget the 12 of 12. That is on the 12th of February, as is the 12th of every month. And the question for the month is... No, not the question for... Oh, is that what I've forgotten? Oh, I don't know. Oh, I'll have to have a listen back. I'm sorry, if I have missed out, please feel free to shoot me. The competition for the month, what date was Mike Bushell's cache hidden? I haven't given you the GC number on purpose. I haven't even given you the name of the cache. Get in touch with us. You can email me, ukgcpodcast@gmail.com. You can get on the website and send us a contact at www.ukgcpodcast.com. As I mentioned previously, right at the start of the show, I think, we're on Twitter at ukgcpodcast. We're on Facebook at ukgeocachingpodcast. The links for both of those you can find from our main website. Get in touch, record something for us, come and say hello. Look forward to meeting some of you soon. Have a lovely, safe February. We'll catch up with you in March. Bye-bye now. We'll be right back.